FM. This hour of programming is brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by Elliott Counseling Group. Elliott Counseling Group has a diverse group of 30 licensed therapists providing individual, group, family, and marital therapy. Elliott Counseling is currently offering teletherapy sessions and an online support group to help navigate the emotional aspects of these difficult times. Kevin Elliott Counseling has locations near downtown Champaign, close to Campus Town, in Lincoln Square Mall, and in Tuscola. More information is available online at Kevin Elliott. That's Kevin ELLIOTTCounseling.com or by phone at 217-398-9066. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a pre-recorded interview with Nikki Grace, founder of the Central Illinois Amputee Support Group and certified peer visitor and trainer for the Amputee Coalition. But first, disability news for the week of August 10th, 2020. People with developmental disabilities living in institutions have been hard hit by the coronavirus, but no one knows how widespread the issue is. Advocates say that needs to change. The Trump administration implemented rules in May mandating that nursing homes report COVID-19 infections directly to federal officials and notify residents and their families of those cases. But despite numerous outbreaks, no similar rules apply to other types of institutional settings. According to Allison Barkoff, director of advocacy at the Center for Public Representation, quote, "We do not know what outbreaks have looked like at intermediate care facilities for individuals with intellectual disability, psychiatric facilities, or even group homes. We hear reports, we see reports in the media, but there is no federal requirement that these be reported. It's really just what makes the news," end quote. Barkoff said most states are not collecting data on COVID-19 cases at institutions serving people with developmental disabilities, or if they are, they're not making the data public. Disability advocates say there's no reason why the nursing home requirements shouldn't apply to other types of Medicaid-funded institutional settings. In comments submitted last month on the nursing home regulations, advocates with the Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities Long-Term Services and Supports Task Force called it appalling that the only source currently for national data on infection and death rates across all types of institutional settings is a tracking tool compiled by the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network, a small nonprofit which is collecting what's available from state governments and monitoring media reports. Advocates wrote, quote, "Residents in all institutional settings, not just nursing homes, are at serious risk during the COVID-19 crisis, and regulations to promote resident safety must address all institutions if we hope to effectively mitigate the outbreaks residents in these settings face," end quote. To date, the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network notes that there have been over 269,000 cases and more than 61,000 deaths in congregate settings, but the group indicates that's likely an incomplete picture. So far, advocates indicated that their conversations with the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services have not yielded any changes in policy. A bill introduced in the Senate in May, known as the Nursing Home COVID-19 Protection and Prevention Act, would provide emergency funding and require the Department of Health facilities and of Health and Human Services to collect data on COVID-19 cases and deaths at nursing homes, intermediate care facilities, and psychiatric hospitals. Disability advocates are pushing Congress to incorporate such provisions in broader COVID-19 relief legislation. The state of Illinois last week released a plan changing services for people with disabilities and others as a result of the COVID crisis. Effective immediately, all people receiving food assistance through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, otherwise known as the SNAP program, have had an automatic increase to the maximum benefit allowed. Also, those benefits may be used to make purchases online. $2 million has been designated to support crisis mental health services by increasing funding to providers. Providers will increase demand triage services to determine level of care and offer additional crisis services to individuals. Additionally, funds will be allocated to build capacity to better serve diverse communities. Financial assistance will be given to day services and group home providers. Individuals served will have an increase of 15 hours of services per month if they live in a group home. Children on the home-based waiver will now receive the same amount of funding as an adult, increasing their monthly allotment by 50%. Parents of those children may now enroll as a paid service provider as well. For details on the new plan, visit the IDHS website at dhs.state.il.us. And finally, people with Down syndrome have some genes that are underactive, leading to heart problems and poor muscle development, but the decreased expression of those genes may have positive ramifications too. It seems to lower the risk of solid tumors forming. Scientists from Stanley Mann Children's Research Institute at Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago used skin samples from two patients with Down syndrome to pinpoint the exact genes that are underexpressed and to determine how they interfere with tumor formation. They recently published their observations in the journal Scientific Reports. The next step for the Mann Research Institute team is to validate their discoveries in animal studies. They believe their findings will ultimately inspire treatments that will help patients battling cancer, as well as people born with Down syndrome. And that's the news for this week.
Ooh, all night long she can two-step and sway. Don't keep me waiting, come and lie beside me.
And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today by my guest on the phone, Nikki Grace. And Nikki is the founder of an organization called the Central Illinois Amputee Support Group. Welcome to the program, Nikki.
Thank you so much for having me.
I was really excited to meet you because I know that there has been no group really in the Central Illinois area, at least not that I was aware of, previous to meeting you at the Disability Resource Expo a few weeks ago. So we're going to talk a lot about that and the work that you're doing, but first of all, why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners?
As you said, my name is Nikki Grace. I live in Toledo, Illinois, which is a little south of Champaign, but my amputation was done in Chicago, and after that I did rehabilitation in Carle Hospital in Champaign, and that's why the group started up there.
Okay. And so tell us a little bit about your group and who is a part of it and what kinds of things do you do to support each other in this journey that you're traveling?
Sure. So really anyone touched by limb loss or limb difference is welcome to be a part of the group. That's amputees that, you know, come from result of amputation from any source, or people born with limb difference. all welcomed into the group, as well as their family members or caregivers. The group is made up of, right now, mostly amputees, and there are a few care providers in there as well. We keep the group about peer support and peer interaction. We try to keep a format of 1 month. We have a social group meeting and catch up, and everyone gets to share a little bit about what's, you know, been going on for them. And then we'd follow that up with a guest speaker on a topic that relates to amputees, be it health and fitness, chiropractic, the change in the law for cannabis, really topics, everything under the sun that you could think of. And we alternate back and forth.
And so in your support group, and I come from a place of ignorance here, I'll admit this right up front, my background is more in the area of intellectual disability. And so, but my program actually is open to all types of disability. So let's talk a little bit about what are some of the issues that people with who have amputations, what are some of the things that they're dealing with on a daily basis that you feel folks can benefit from some support?
So, and really that kind of touches on the nexus of what we do, and that is to try and provide peer support in addition to education, advocacy, and prevention. So it's really an immersive group that supports individuals and families with all sorts of adjustments after amputation. We have found that there is experiencing an amputation is an incredibly unique experience, and it's one that's best learned about and shared with people whom have also experienced it. So first, you know, person shared experience, helping guide people through the new challenges that they face. And that's from physical challenges to environmental challenges, you know, like living in a home that's not adapted or doesn't have wide enough doors or a safe way for you to use facilities. All of those things are considerations after you lose a limb.
Right, right. So I guess, you know, in my mind, when I was preparing for this interview today, I was thinking that most people who have amputations are folks who were in traumatic situations, you know, war veterans and people in car accidents. But you talked a little bit about education and prevention. So what are some other types of amputations that people might be dealing with that you could educate us about?
Sure. So it is not uncommon when I'm out in public that someone will come up and ask me if I'm a veteran and attempt to thank me for my service. That, you know, I'm young, and that's not an unreasonable assumption to make. And everybody is guilty of making the assumption. The truth is that the number of veterans that have come home from these most recent wars with amputation number less than 2,000. But there are currently 2.1 million amputees living in the United States. That's roughly 500 more amputees every single day across the country. The largest population of in that group of amputees is diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
So diabetics are the largest population for amputation in the United States, and 80% of diabetics whom lose one limb to diabetes-related complications, vascular disease, or infection, wounds that won't heal, will lose the second limb. And so education and prevention are huge parts of what we do. You know, maybe we're that early interaction after an amputation, and it's the call to be present for that individual to realize, you know, I can take an active role in my own health and well-being and do everything in my power to avoid having a secondary amputation.
Yeah, and it seems to me like, you know, if your amputation was as a result of diabetes, and I can think of several people off the top of my head that I personally know who have had that happen to them, that the concerns and the needs for support might even require a completely different support group from the typical, because there are so many medical things that they have in common.
Absolutely. And I think that there is a multi-pronged approach going on out there in the world of medical prevention and education. In the small community where I live, I know in the last several weeks I've seen at least two different programs directed at helping people to avoid amputation or avoid issues with diabetes and their feet. So I think there are lots of different fields that come into play here. And like I said, maybe meeting another amputee who did make that change is the direct connection, you know, to lead to further education and prevention.
Right. So we talked a little bit on the phone before we started the interview about some advocacy that your group has been doing. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. That's another big place of passion within this group, and I know it's a place of passion for me as well, and that is being your own voice, learning how to use your own voice, and knowing how to direct your voice to the right areas to get the kind of attention that you're needing. So I was just in Washington, D.C. last week with the Amputee Coalition to meet with legislators in the House and the Senate to discuss getting support for some bipartisan legislation at the federal level called Insurance Fairness for Amputees. We have insurance fairness for amputees here in the state of Illinois. In fact, we have it in 21 states across the country, and now just looking for recognition at a federal level so that this minimum standard of care that is outlined within insurance fairness is achievable for everyone across the country.
And, you know, I never considered that there would be issues with insurance for people who are amputees. So what are the concerns there?
So surprising as it may sound, because I'm sure just the thought of prosthetics sounds expensive to most people that hear it. Mm-hmm. But there are insurance companies in this country who cap your prosthetic coverage with a lifetime cap of $5,000, $15,000, $25,000 as a lifetime cap.
Oh, my gosh.
For a child that's born, you know, with a congenital limb difference, $1,000, $5,000 isn't even going to get them through their first year of life.
Right.
Before they've capped out on what they're entitled to. Or they make arbitrary, you know, dollar amount caps on specific componentry of prosthetics. And that in and of itself is self-limiting. As I said a minute ago, you know, the idea of losing one limb to diabetes and then taking an active role in your own health and well-being and trying to get healthier is going to require a prosthetic. And there are insurance companies out there whom will let you have a wheelchair or a prosthetic. And that's not a feasible trade-off because you need both in order to use, you know, to learn to use a prosthetic. And things like that. So, yes, people don't think about that. No one really goes to their insurance policy and looks at prosthetic coverage unless they've lost a limb.
That's right.
So most people don't know what's under that part of the coverage in their policy. And as I said, and then, you know, you get into Medicaid across the country. You know, in the state of Texas, you can't get a prosthetic limb if you're over the age of 21 on Medicaid. There are other
seriously
that, yes, including Illinois, that line item deny prosthetics that have microprocessor componentry in them, like the leg that I use. We're not talking a super high functioning prosthesis. It's just got a computer in it, and that technology is eliminated from a number of the state-based medical programs.
Wow. Well, you know, I don't you know, fault people for not knowing about it unless they're impacted by it in their own life, because I mean, that's just the nature of how we all work. But I appreciate the opportunity to learn more about this. So there's some legislation, federal legislation right now that you were in Washington, D.C. to advocate for?
Yes. So the insurance fairness for amputees across the board at a federal level, introducing it at a discussion level right now and using the representation of the 21 states that already have it as a reason why we should have it across the country. Also, keeping a focus on the way that the Amputee Coalition and the Limb Loss Resource Center get their funding and keeping that funding intact as a part of the federal budget as it has been a line item for removal the last three budgets in a row.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And then you also, first, before I move on to the event you went to in Denver this last weekend, where is this legislation in Congress right now? Has it been approved by either House, or is it just kind of floating out there at the moment?
It's floating. It's still in a discussion level. It was proposed in previous sessions, but that was before the Affordable Care Act, which kind of replaced some of the features that are in the Insurance Fairness for Amputees. So now that the Affordable Care Act and things like lifetime caps or pre-existing conditions are in jeopardy again, we're refocusing some attention back on this legislation and trying to get it at a federal level.
Yeah, yeah. So you have sponsors right now for it, or is it still too early for that?
Still too early for that. We have a lot of every legislator that I personally met with, their office in D.C., was all for the bill, all for supporting the bill.
So that's the thing about disability issues, is that really it is bipartisan. They can't really take sides because everybody is affected by disability at some place in their life.
Right? I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah. So what were you doing? You went from Washington, D.C. to Denver. What happened in Denver?
I did. So I touched base at home for exactly 23 hours and 9 minutes before heading to Denver. I was there also with the Amputee Coalition. They had what's called a Limb Loss Education Day this past Saturday at Presbyterian St. Luke's Hospital there in downtown Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a full-day event with different speakers talking about new and emerging technology within the amputee, community and healthcare-based entities. And then there were also representatives there from different prosthetic companies, you know, with the newest and latest and greatest in prosthetics to share with people. Again, with emerging technologies and things like that. So it's really an information-based activity and an opportunity to spend a day with, 100, 150 other amputees. And if you think about it, that's a rare occasion as an amputee that you get to spend time with one or two other amputees. But to get to be with that many people that have such similar experiences is really an incredible opportunity.
Yeah, sounds like it.
The day before the Limb Loss Education Day, I did teach an 8-hour class. It's a class offered by the Amputee Coalition for certified peer visitors. And we certified 10 more peer visitors in the greater Denver area on Friday afternoon.
Yeah, great. So let's talk a little bit about that part of your life, too. You train peer visitors. So what do the peer visitors, what's their job?
So, again, these are going to be people that are in some way touched by limb loss, but not in a professional capacity. So not occupational therapists or physical therapists or groups like that. We want lay persons. We want people whom are living with an amputation or family members or support partner people that have a close relationship or close proximity to someone who's living with limb loss. And it's an 8-hour training session and really focuses a lot around two main principles. One is, yes, your experience is important and what you've gone through could be a very important tool in helping someone else. But truly, the peer visit is not about you. It's about the person that you're visiting And the most important thing that you could do in that visit might just be to listen.
Mm-hmm.
So we spend a good portion of the day talking about types of listening and different listening skills and how we use them and how they could be used to make sure that someone is feeling heard during what could be a very emotional visit.
Sounds really interesting and amazing, and I think that a lot of organization support groups could benefit by that. I know I worked with the local Down Syndrome Network early on here and visiting families in the hospital who just had a baby with a disability, and that is so powerful. So I understand completely the need for the peer visitors, for sure. So we talked a little bit at the expo, Nikki, about the need for a support group here in Champaign-Urbana. Are you working on that at all? Have you been in touch with any organizations here locally or folks that might be interested in starting something up?
So we do have a group that meets there in Champaign-Urbana.
Oh, you do? Okay.
And it meets on the second Wednesday of every month at 6 p.m. at Carl Hospital on the third floor in the Inpatient Rehabilitation Activity Center. So that does meet up there every month. We are starting a second group farther south in the Effingham, St. Elmo, Vandalia area, because we have a number of amputees that are from south of Effingham. And again, the next closest support group for them would be somewhere down near St. Louis. We just had a group start in Mount Vernon last month. So, you know, it's a big distance to travel to seek support.
Yeah, I could see that being so important for, you know, say a school who has a kid that comes to go to their school who is an amputee, and, you know, to have somebody come in and educate the whole school about, you know, what that's like and what kind of things they can do to help support the student would be an amazing advantage to them.
It would be an incredible opportunity. So we do have, like, this month is Limb Loss Awareness Month, was designated by the Coalition 5 years ago and received a proclamation from Governor Pritzker here in Illinois officially proclaiming the month of April Limb Loss Awareness Month. Also working on a House resolution here within the state of Illinois as well.
Sounds like you're a busy woman. Thank you so much for being on the program. You have an email address where people can get more information from you if they're interested?
Absolutely. So we are on Facebook, on Instagram, Twitter, and do have a webpage at centralillinoisamputees.org. And if you want more information, you can email info@centralillinoisamputees.org.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us today. Nikki Grace, and a member of the support group for, I put the paper down here, founder of the Central Illinois Amputee Support Group. Thanks a lot for joining us today, Nikki.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And thank you for listening to this rebroadcast. For more current information, you can contact Nikki Grace at centralillinoisamputees.org or email info@centralillinoisamputees.org. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.
No, I'll stay. Down, gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down.
You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, and WEFT is currently offering our listeners the rare opportunity to purchase a newly created WEF t-shirt. The t-shirt comes in four different colors, and with a WEF design on the front and our program schedule on the back, sizes medium through extra large are $20, and double X are slightly more at $22. Shipping is free, and limited numbers of shirts in popular sizes are available, so don't wait too long. Visit weft.org to view the t-shirt design and for ordering information. And now here is this week's episode of Food Sleuth Radio. Thanks for tuning in.